right. Well, here we are. To dream again. To dare again. To feel enjoyment and happiness again. Or for the first time. To realize this is living. Be inspired. To see your life as an exciting journey of discovery. With your host of the Inspire Possibility Show, Mark Sussman.
Hey everybody, this is Mark Sussman. Thanks for listening to the Inspire Possibility Show, the show that is designed to inspire you to think of possibilities that perhaps you weren't thinking about, new ideas, and also things to stimulate you and to get you thinking, kind of hopefully entertain you. And every week I invite various individuals that I consider cutting-edge thought leaders, people who I find interesting, inspire me. Sometimes they're sent to me, introduced to me by different various publicists. Sometimes I meet somebody in the normal circle of my life, somebody introduced me to somebody. And sometimes I'm at a talk and I listen to the speaker and I go, that sounds like somebody I really want to get to know more and to find out their story. And one thing I notice is that we all kind of wonder how we can be inspired in our lives and how we can find peace. And you know, at one time, religion kind of, everybody turned to religion as we grew up. A lot of us that had grew up in a faith such as Christianity or Judaism or that were in the Islam faith, there was usually a hierarchy, a structure, perhaps a book that was like, you know, the New Testament, the Old Testament, the Quran, and we had guidance. But what I found is from people I meet is that people have turned away from formal religion, and they're going inward and trying to find a system that works for them. They've turned to more spiritual ideas. And so Rabbi Henry Shreeman is my guest today, and he has some insights about how we get inspired in these times and what we can do and what role does spirituality and religion find in our lives. And when I was reading his background, he's also a college professor, and when I was reading his background, it didn't necessarily seem unusual until I just found this out a few minutes ago. He used to be a mime, and that kind of intrigued me. I don't know why, but let's meet Rabbi Henry Shreeman. So thanks, Henry, for being my guest.
It's a pleasure to be here. And as a mime, it's always fun to talk.
The deficit, right? You're making up for the deficit.
And we are.
Yes. And what do you think about some of the things I said about what role does spirituality and religion play in our life?
Well, I mean, I'm concerned at this juncture that religion is part of the solution and also part of the problem, and it's out of sync with society. So as you said, if we look longitudinally, people have moved away over the last 50 years and will project equally in the next 50 years further and further away from the organized congregational life. At the same time, some religious leaders and some communities have opened up other ways of finding the spiritual components of life.
And so how do they go about doing that? How do people go about doing that, what you just said?
Well, there are many different circles. In some communities, they worship their bodies, and that has become a new substitution. In other settings, they collect material goods and then talk about those goods as a subset of self-expression. And there are others who import concepts and ideas from other cultures, adapt and adjust them to American life, and therefore you end up with in the Bay Area where I'm living, a very healthy dose of Jews who are Buddhists. And you see these hybrids of how people pursue components of what might be the spiritual life.
Well, you were mentioning different ways of people finding that spirituality. And how do you define what is spiritual? I mean, you talked about people into their bodies or, you know, where do you draw the line? Can you draw a line in terms of what is spiritual and what isn't spiritual? How do you do that?
Well, spirituality is a subset of religion, and people tend to forget that. And the term religion, religio, one of the things I teach is Latin and classical Hebrew and Arabic and stuff. So I'm very involved academically and always have been with the essence of words. And religio has the component of being bound. We are binding ourselves to an idea or a concept. So, for example, it's very hard to talk about an, in quotes, authentic spiritual life if there is not something beyond the body and the material. And in traditional religions, or let's say the Western religions, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam, as you mentioned, the key experience is the experience, in quotes, of the Godhead, the divine. And the reaction to that experience, starting about 4,000 years ago, well documented in the Hebrew Bible, and then in the New Testament, and then in the Quran, it basically is a reaction to different components of how the Godhead or the essence of a God spirit influenced them and what made them feel bound to those experiences become the religions and the practices that we work through. On the other hand, each of those religions comes with an equal number of practices and rules of what the God's expectation is, and to be able to market it or perpetuate it, each of those religions comes with their own myths. So you have a blend of the authentic experience, in quotes, back in the day, the current activities that you do on a regular basis to keep that spirit alive so that if it happens again or you have a taste of it, you can connect it to those historic moments, which are called revelations. And then you tell people about it. So the story of the Exodus becomes the going down and rising up of the people of Israel from bondage to freedom. And 2,000 years later, Christianity coming out of Judaism, the mythology is the dying and rising Jesus. And you wait another 600 years after the advent of the time of Jesus, and Muhammad's experience is annotated, if you will. And there, the revelation is through Gabriel, and the inspiration comes through that series of myths and stories. So that's pretty much how traditional religion has operated. We're, to some degree, not a fully, in a period where people are adapting, adjusting, and making it actually less communal and more individual.
So that's what, and I guess in a way, religion, in a way, I get the sense is more communal. It's more about community as opposed to spiritual in a way. I mean, I guess you can say community is also spiritual, but I'm looking at it, a lot of people that are like to belong, like to feel part of a community, where people that are on more of a spiritual path, they like that too, but it is a very individual thing in terms of how people find that inside themselves. And my quest.
Yeah, but in the evolution of religion, this has happened before. And somewhere around 500 BCE, there was a rise within late, if you will, late biblical Judaism. The biblical period sort of shuts down in 250 BCE, and then it goes into the rabbinic period and into what is now contemporary Judaism, which is a rabbinic religion, not a fully biblical religion. There's no sacrifice and no centrality of the priests and things like that. So components of Jewish life and culture evolved. And the key issue in 500 BCE was the place of the individual in religion. The pomp and circumstance of these large temples in other religions like Mesopotamia and in Egypt, centralized worship, and in the temple in Jerusalem, had its sort of heyday 1000 BCE and before. And then there was this decrescendo where people were looking for, so what is my personal relationship? So in Judaism, you can see the phraseology shift from God on high, the God in the sky, the Lord of hosts is the way you hear it in English, that it's a very distant God. And in that period, in the pre-rabbinic period, you can start seeing God referred to as a father. So there was an expectation somewhere between 500 BCE and then with the Greco-Roman period, the 300s and 200s, is solidified in the notion that Jews and then eventually the starting point of Christianity would be an individual relationship with that God as opposed to a sort of corporate communal relationship. And so we're sort of going through that phase again where people are looking for a direct spiritual experience through their bodies or through components of human existence, which are, let's say, transmaterial. And therefore, you come up with the term of a spiritual search. And it probably isn't found in text, and it probably still is found with a teacher, and it comes with its own myth and values and what it'll do for you. If you give it this, it will give you that. And that same sort of covenantal relationship, even though everybody thinks on the spiritual path that they've created something new, it's the same pattern that has been there off and on, sort of rhythmically in religion for thousands of years.
Yeah. So, Henry, let's go over that again. You're saying that in a way, this quest is somebody is looking, somebody that's on a quest is also wants some types of relationship with some other entity. I mean, it could be a teacher, a book, or
well, you, is
that,
you know,
did
you
I understand
I know,
that right?
Yeah, you and I know that when people come into a spiritual practice, there is some central figure who got them there. They read a book. They saw a video. They were in nature, and then they try to relate it to someone else, and then they say, oh, you've got to talk to blank, or you've got to join us here. So people end up recreating the communal component, and it may not be formalized, but when you stop and think about it, it's no different than the, if you will, in Latin, praxis, the practice mandated in Judaism in the biblical period, prayer five times a day, all related to nature, to it then being refined down to three times a day, dawn, in the noon, early noon, and then at dusk, which are all very spiritual times. And you hear people talk about their ritualized behaviors. They take yoga at 6 in the morning, and they take their walk at 11, and this is the way they bond themselves. And the word bond is religio, and, you know, the ability to transform oneself through that relationship is a new covenant. You're basically cutting a new deal with the universe. If I do this, I will get that. And then you tell people about it, and they sign up with you.
Right. So back to, I just want to follow up on this. And I mean, if, when we look at formalized religion, I mean, the agreement was, if you follow us and get involved with what our tenants are, you will get this. And what you're saying today is the same kind of relationship. If you believe this or do this, you will get this. So if you meditate every day, you will get this experience. If you go to yoga or you follow this or follow that. So what you're saying is it's really the same type of if you do this. It's almost like an exchange. Is that what I'm hearing?
Well, it is an exchange, and the Romans called it do ut deus. If I give in the same way, you will give. So they did their sacrifice to the gods, and they were very snide about it, as were the Mesopotamians. If I do blank, you will give me blank. And they're quite explicit about it in Sumerian texts and ancient texts. It became more subtle in the biblical period. In the Hebrew Bible, it wasn't as crass, but it said, if you treat people well, if you treat the widow and the orphan and the stranger in your land well, the land will be good for you. And the component that may be missing in some people's spiritual search, which they don't tend to like when you point it out to them, is the call to build the better society. The call to go outside of the circle of their own experience and their own body and to create the good society. Now, some people will and some people won't, but it's not a central tenet. In Eastern religions, some of them, and components of subsets of Eastern religion, when we adapt them, you can live alone on an ashram and let the world move and go by, whether there's justice or no justice. And our previous president periodically would wax semi-religious. People missed it because they weren't looking for it. But he would periodically say, when he wanted America to become active in the world based on social justice issues, he said, we can't stand idly by. And that is one of the central tenets of a more formalized Western religions, which is the call to fix a broken world. In Hebrew,
right.
It's tikkun olam, which many people have heard of. But it
to
really
giving back.
It's to have social justice radar and not to live calmly in the world, but to be agitated in the world.
Right.
So it does have a very different quality. To get social justice, you can't be calm and centered. You have to be willing to be off-centered and agitated. So it's a very interesting dialogue that one could have, because the Buddha at the beginning was very agitated and very angry at what he saw in his early travels, and then withdrew and then came back with his methods. So people miss that component, that he was also a searcher for social justice.
So what you're saying is that to really have an authentic spiritual life, you have to also be committed to social justice? Did I understand that right?
Well, I can't be a judge of whose spiritual life is authentic and not. What I'm saying is that in some circles of the search for the spiritual life, the social justice component is left out. And the social justice urge can be seen in the Hebrew prophets, and it's amplified by about 80% of what Jesus says. And then when Martin Luther King and Gandhi look to fix the world, they went back to the classic Hebrew prophets. You don't hear that in a yoga class, right?
Right.
And
yes.
the feelings that I have walking my dogs at dawn and at dusk and at midnight are spiritual centerings, if you will. They echo classical prayer, if you're looking for it, or the Psalms that praise nature, if you're looking for it, or the fact that Jesus had his sermon on a mountain. He didn't do it, in a valley, or he had his major experiences on water. He didn't do it, in a gymnasium. I mean, these are very revealing. you know, the spirituality that Muhammad senses is in a cave on a mountain. So those common themes are where we get our catalyst, if you will, to be bonded with nature / the spiritual universe. But then, okay, so now what do you do with it? That would be what the classic prophets would say. And in the period where I was describing earlier, this sort of search for the place of the individual in religion, as opposed to these large temple events, one of the rabbis in the Talmud says, the center of the universe is where you're standing. It's right there. Where you are standing, that is the center of the universe. And it wasn't about just experiencing the Godhead on your own. It's like, okay, so start fixing your part of the universe.
Fixing you.
Well, fixing you and the circle that you have an influence on. In other words, it would be the difference between going to a university class at Dominican or Sonoma State, where I, you know, spend my time at both of these places. You know, it's a big difference between teaching a great class and then being present to the human beings who are in the class.
Uh-huh.
And adapting and adjusting. So the influence on your circle, not just being good with yourself, but the influence that you have on others, that's the beginning of fixing things.
Right. So let me ask you a question, Henry.
Yeah, go ahead.
I always like my guest, as we're nearing the end of our time together, is what inspires you right now?
Me?
Yes.
The broken world.
Henry.
Henry. What inspires Henry is the broken world. No matter how old I am now, there's more to fix. There's a younger generation that is actually along the lines of what you're saying. They're now searching. For the most part, the millennials' parents didn't give them a formal sense of religion or classical text. So there's a whole sort of rejuvenation of interest if the people interact well. So that's what inspires me. There's a whole other generation that is intrigued by both classical religion and making sense of it for themselves. The last place they would want to go at the outset is a church, a synagogue, or a mosque. So to me, that's very exciting. And
you describe this, Henry, as broken what? Was it, you said broken promises? Or?
The broken world.
Uh-huh.
In other words, it's a very rabbinic concept that the world is flawed and God ain't going to fix it and the Messiah ain't going to fix it. It's up to you and I to make tikkun olam, to fix this broken universe that we live in. And that's the starting place that still works for me. When we get religion right, we will treat the other as though it were our own, as opposed to, in quotes, just listening to our own news sources and resubstantiating our knowledge. So, you know, again, the rabbis were on target when they said you get one mouth, you get one nose, but you get two eyes and two ears. So you got to be observing the other more and listening to the other more. And we're in a period where people feed themselves on the left and the right with ample helpings of what they already know. And that's the exact opposite of the call to fix the world. The trick is to get the other side understandable to yourself. So to me, that's a good old-fashioned inspiration. And the students, you know, who stick it out, some of them are quite moved by this.
Mm-hmm. So what advice right now would you have for people that are, you know, they're kind of going, you know, it's crazy. We got this president that's unpredictable. People seem to be more different, there's more polarization than ever.
Yeah.
And I can't believe anything my government says. I can't believe the president.
That's only half of, see that to me, the way you phrase that, and as both a rabbi and as a teacher, I've got to walk a more delicate line. half the country is happy. Half the country was starved for whatever they're getting right now. So the trick now is, if you're a liberal, is to listen to right-wing radio. And the trick is, if you're in the right wing and you're feeling on the top of your game because the president and the House and all the politics looks like it's going your way, this is the time for you to open the New York Times, and this is your chance to listen to your liberal friends, because it's the civility in the lines between these two polar differences
right.
where righteous living begins. In other words, so we have to be very, very careful in our phraseology, right? To me,
absolutely.
That's what's inspiring. We can't assume everybody's on the right, and we can't assume everybody's on the left. But what we can assume is that the other side is not a monster, that there's something there that is merits your listening to it and understanding it. And then you have the beginnings of civility and dialogue. And to me, that's the solution. And as you can figure out, I didn't think of that all on my own. Again, some of these
right.
are the classic phrases of the prophets and the rabbis and the New Testament and the Quran. You know, this call to treat the other like your own. And to me, that's
right.
a very important exercise.
Right. You know, I once had a Dick Simon on, and Dick Simon, he gave a TED talk where he said the most dangerous four-letter word is them.
Uh-huh.
How we kind of, yeah, we create the other instead of us, we always create the other in the form of them. And if we somehow could come together and to bridge the gap, and that's a hard thing, is how do you bridge that gap? That's really the challenge, I think, for a lot of people.
I always felt the counterpoint. I always felt the counterpoint to his perspective was, humans will always create the us. The trick is not to create the us at the expense of the them.
Right.
See, there is that was very poetic and it's very moving. But if you really look at sociology and religion and sociology and the way in which humans form, or just look at the animal kingdom, right? They are suspicious of the other. We can do better. And the
uh-huh.
trick, I think, is create your communality, if you will, your commune, your commonality, but not at the expense of being different than blank, whatever the blank is. So create a country club, but don't create it based on excluding others. You see what I mean? That's a simplistic
yes.
approach.
Right.
But there's nothing
and
wrong with having a common group.
Right. And I think really that, you know, one solution I see or suggestion is that for people to focus on more on what we have in common rather than what's different about us, to really see our commonality. And I know that to come down how we really, you know, we want to love and be loved. I think that's inherent in everybody. We want to feel that we matter.
You have to take it one step further. Yes, there is commonality, but you have to embrace and be okay with the differences.
Right.
You know, Jews
Absolutely.
Really
yeah.
don't need to become Christian. Muslims really don't have to fix themselves to become right with the other, which happens to be the West or the U.S. So when you look at people of good spirit, if you will, within each of these classic religions, or the majority of Americans are starting within the next 50 years to be less identifiable as these classic religions, as you look at those phenomena shifting, we just have to make sure that we understand and learn a lot about the other and respect it. And realize it doesn't have to fix itself. That's where we get into trouble, when religious leaders or community leaders think they have to fix the other side. The trick is, how do you live with the other?
I like that. How do we live with the other rather than fix the other?
Yeah. You can fix yourself.
And how do we see the good in others? How do we see the good in others? So we're pretty much our time is up, unfortunately, or fortunately, and And I know you've kind of have given us some things to think about, to inspire us and to give us hope. And thank you so much for being my guest on the Inspire Possibility Show. And I want to say to the listeners out there that are listening, every week, as you know, I have some amazing people that I get to know, and hopefully you get to know, and they help inspire us to think in a new way. And until the next time, journey on.
You've been listening to Inspire Possibility Show with Mark Susnow. To learn more about Mark Susnow, go to inspirepossibility.com and click on the contact button. Schedule a complimentary visit with Mark or email him at mark@inspirepossibility.com. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine the possibilities. Imagine.